Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll-free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now, with today's topic, here is James White.
Well, that is if the microphone turns on.
Hey, you know, when we do these weird times, I have to trick the computer, and sometimes it's just not happy with me about that, you know.
That's because the computer was made sometime in the late 1990s or early this century. It's older.
You're at 2002.
It's older.
You know, we got to make it scream before we let it go.
Anyway.
And when it starts screaming, we might let it go.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pierce, for your participation in the program. You can turn the microphone off. Thank you very much. Yeah, well, welcome to a sort of special edition of Dividing Line. An hour late, but hey, it's better to be an hour late than to not do it at all. Then again, some of you would wish that we wouldn't do that at all anyway, so it doesn't really matter too much. 877-753-3341. Before I forget it, give a shout out to probably our only listener in Homer, Alaska. Yes, Homer, Alaska. We have Dennis McCullin. It's M-A-C-K-U-L-I-N. It could be Maculin. It could be Maculin. It could be Maculin. There's lots of ways we could pronounce that one. But anyways, he and his wife feel like they're the only Reformed Baptists on the Kenai Peninsula. Well, that's okay. It's good to be a Reformed Baptist wherever you are. And so he's up there and... actually, he started a podcast himself with the 1689 London Baptist Confession, which probably has as many listeners in the Kenai Peninsula as we do. But Dan wrote and said he listens, and so we thought we'd give a shout-out to Dan. And sitting next to me, for some of you who don't like it and some of you who do, is my brand-new Amazon Kindle. Yes, I bit the bullet. And I got to admit, especially for someone like me, I mean, who lives next to the bulkhead in row 10 on the A319, at least I can get row 10 in the A319. If you're wondering, I shouldn't tell people this, but 10A and 10F are the seats on the A319, the Airbus, that do not have an exit row seat in front of them. There's no 9 there. So you've got all the room in the world, but you can still put your stuff in the seat back two rows ahead. You just have to, you know, get on your knees to get up there to get it. That's all. But it's about the best you're going to do outside of first class. And anyways, for people like me who sit there, that's where I was as I came back from Georgia and as I went to Georgia, in fact. That's the place where you can do lots of reading and so on and so forth. And I got to admit, this Kindle... for those of you who have not seen it, it is an electronic reading device, and it is, in my opinion, very well designed. It fits in the hand very nicely. The main thing for me is it is extremely readable. There's this new, what's it called, electronic ink or electronic paper, something. There's some. It's not the only one that has it. There are others that have it too, I think, but it is very easy on the eye. No two ways about it. And I'm talking about reading here, not just the way it looks, but it's not overly stylish as far as that goes. But it's very, very easy to read. And I got to admit, there is the geek in me. I saw a book I wanted to pick up. It looked really, really interesting. And I'm online. I've got my Kindle sitting next to me. And I'm on my regular computer at home, actually. And I look at it, and yes, it's available in Kindle. And it's a matter of one click, and within 1 minute, you're reading the introduction, and you're reading the book. I mean, it's just that fast. And you're like, whoa, that is really wild. So you go, what would be on James White's Kindle after having it for about 27 hours. What is on James White's Kindle after 27 hours? Well, first of all, I put a 2 gig SD card in it, which I found in here. And so it's got plenty of room now. But one of the first things that I found fascinating is Raymond Ibrahim's The Al-Qaeda Reader. Yeah, The Al-Qaeda Reader. These are documents from Al-Qaeda. And I'm in the chapter on the theology of Al-Qaeda. And that's something people don't... And I talk about this in my presentation, so now I'll be able to give even better quotes than I could before. But The Al-Qaeda Reader... what?
What's, only here would of course. Something like
well,
that
why
be.
Why do you think people would listen to this crazy
incredible.
Thing? It's got to be as weird as possible. Look at the people who listen. I mean, Carla in Canada listens. I mean, you know, Wonky listens. He doesn't admit it, but even he listens.
Don't mention Carla.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, oh, no man. The secret
Canadian
police are on their way now. Yes, we will be talking about the gulag to the north, Canada, a little bit later on. Sorry about that, Carla. Maybe they'll not find you. Hide in the woods for a while or something. So anyway, he's got the Al-Qaeda Raider. And then we have Church History in Plain Language by Bruce Shelley. The Complete Works of Josephus. That's on my SD card, by the way. We have Berlinski's The Devil's Delusion. We have Bettinson's Documents of the Christian Church. We have Behe's The Edge of Evolution. Fox's Book of Martyrs. The New American Standard Bible, which was all of $5.49, as I recall. We have a non-religious book. Dun, dun, dun. Every once in a while, it's nice to read something about what's going on. That's when I was talking about Lone Survivor. See, I do read Charlie's blog. Then we have Zwemer's The Muslim Christ, which comes from a Muslim perspective. We have Pilgrim's Progress. And then we have three different Quranic translations, which you can put in parallel with one another. And the three, grand total, $4.79 to put those on my Kindle. So that's what's currently on my Kindle. And yes, you can put all sorts of other stuff, and I know there's all sorts of neat websites you can go to. It's nice and small, and it's easy to carry, and there's all sorts of other stuff you can do with it, too. I did download that book about the stuff that you can do with it and how to use the Amazon Kindle. So I gotta admit, it's really cool. There's no two ways about it. And if you are a gadget geek or someone like me who actually has to do a lot of reading and this is easy on the eyes, unlike backlit screens and things like that, then this will be useful to you. There are others. I saw as I was setting stuff up and downloading stuff, there was, I don't know, it was about six or seven in a list once, and they all looked somewhat similar to one another. But Rich thinks it looks like Star Trek has finally arrived. Because, you know, the things they'd read their stuff on, that's what it looks like. You know, it's about that thick. And you know, I don't know if you saw this in the back. They were smart. That's rubber. So not only does it not slide, but that's what you're holding instead of something, the sweat and stuff like that. Yeah, that's very, very well designed along those lines. I do, however, bump the previous page, next page things all the time. That happens a lot, but I'm just clumsy, I guess. So anyways, that's what's on my Kindle. I'll go ahead and turn it off here. Even though the thing they say is once it draws the screen, it's no longer drawing power. It's not taking power to keep the screen in the form that it's in, which I find fascinating. I would like to maybe find a tech paper on how they do that.
So it's kind of like an electronic exosketch. Sketch.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. In fact, when you hit the next page thing, that's exactly what it looks like. There's a blackout and boom. And so that's exactly what it looks like. It's an electronic Etch-a-Sketch. And some people are going, Etch-a-Sketch? How old are you? Anyway. So that's what's there. Man, I'll tell you, I have something I wanted to play for you and talk a little bit about what is going on up in Canada. What has been going on? We've all known this. It's not the one that I posted about yesterday, where on last Friday the Alberta Human Rights Commission. Yeah, that's exactly right. They are definitely drawing their entire foundation from humans rather than from God. There is no transcendent basis for law anymore. The Alberta Human Rights Commission ordered Alberta pastor Stephen, I believe it's Boissouan. I'm assuming it's French, and if it's French, it would be Boissouan. To desist from expressing his views on homosexuality in any sort of public forum. He was also commanded to pay damages equivalent to $7,000 as a result of the tribunal's November decision to side with complainants and homosexual activist Dr. Darren Lund. The tribunal has also called for Boissouan to personally apologize to Lund via a public statement in the local newspaper. Now, I remember reading about a pastor who had been told that he was going to have to take sensitivity training in regards to Islam for having had a conference on Islam in his church. I can guarantee you that if Sharia law takes over, all these secularists who are trying to persecute Christianity right now in the guise of the law will not be offered the option of sensitivity training by the newly established Islamic government. This will not happen, I assure you. they will not find dimitude an overly good thing because the two protected dhimmi classes are both people of the book, and they are not people of anything, the secularists anyways. And when I posted that, I got a note. And I'm not going to mention any names here, though I thank you for the note, and the person who sent this will recognize that, but I just don't want to get anybody in trouble who isn't already in trouble. But from the brother of someone who's not in Canada, but who themselves might be. How's that for being obscure enough? This person's employer is a faith-based company which asks employees to sign a statement of conduct. A statement of conduct? You mean like, you know, pretty much Christian companies have done for a long, long time? You know, that basically says if you act like something other than a Christian and bring dishonor to Christ's name, then we probably don't want you working for us? Yes, they asked employees to sign a statement of conduct. An employee was found to have violated this when she openly declared her newfound lesbianism. She then took the company to court and... We are in Canada, and so obviously in Canada, the Christian is automatically wrong, and whoever is complaining and hating God's law is automatically right. That's the new Canadian motto, according to the Human Rights Commission. The finding was in her favor, and I noticed that is spelled only as an English person or maybe a Canadian would spell favor, so that's a bad thing right there. But with the result that the company has been ordered, among other things, to give their employees sensitivity training, teaching them the merits of the homosexual lifestyle. So we go from expecting standard Christian behavior to having to actively teach the opposite of standard Christian behavior. So they're going to try to find some way around that, obviously, but it's Canada. It is the secular West. It is the people who hate God's law, and they hate those who would dare to submit themselves to God's law. And so under the lie of law, they now wish to promote lawlessness. Is there any doubt in any rational person's mind who just hasn't already been so desensitized, made to go, well, that just could never happen. That just could never happen. It's happening. And unless God brings repentance to the West as a whole, someday you're going to fire up that URL and there ain't going to be nothing here. It's going to happen. So enjoy it while you can. We all need to take every advantage we can. But the fact of the matter is, these folks know that they're wrong. They know that they are suppressing the knowledge of God. They know they're doing these things, and so they don't want to debate. Listen, look at the debates I've done on homosexuality. Was either one of them even close? I mean, seriously, on any rational, intellectual level, was either one of them even close? I mean, in one of them, the guy was admitting he lost before the thing was even over. They can't win in that context, and they know it. And so the only way that they can deal with the issue, of course, is to simply suppress the freedom of speech of those with whom they disagree. That's how you do it. You just shut them up. Be silent. Do not speak any longer. That's what they do, and that's what they are busily doing. And I cannot help but remember once again the very insightful words of one Apostle Paul, who clearly, if there is consistency, if this decision up in Canada is appealed and goes to the highest level, and I was reading something today, and I cannot document this, so I'm giving you this as hearsay right now. Let me tell you that right now. I'd love to track this down. Maybe I'll take the time to do so. But as I was following some leads and some, you know, URLs, and you click here, you click there, and you go over here, and you check that out, and blah, 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 I noticed just in passing a statement where one of the Supreme Court justices in Canada had mentioned in a speech, she had mentioned in a speech, that the Supreme Court in Canada now functioned for Canada the way the church once did. Now think about that for just a second, and you'll realize that in essence what you've got is you've got the Inquisition. It's just secularists doing it instead of Roman Catholics doing it. Same thing. And just as the Roman Catholic Inquisitor stood there while people were being tortured on the rack and smiled in benevolence, because, of course, this is for your good. This pain is for your good. It is to save your soul. In the same way, the secularist looks at us and goes, "Oh, you poor benighted people. You are trapped in your myths. You need to listen to Richard Dawkins and to Christopher Hitchens. But we cannot allow your deception, the fact that you can't see the reality of the great glories of human science and accomplishment, to keep us from the forward movement of our evolution." And they'll stand there and benignly smile as they silence you. Oh, they'll talk about how wonderful it is to have freedom of thought, as long as that thought is our thought. And I don't know how many of you read 1984, but he was only 24 years off. He was pretty close. You know, I read 1984 before 1984 came along. And, in fact, when I read it, it was sort of like, well, it's still down the road, but we're not going to get there. Well, that's right. We didn't quite as quickly as he thought, but we're getting there. And, man, now with the technology we have to be able to track people and observe people, whoa. You know, some of those movies out there that, speak to these things are starting to become really scary in their fulfillment. It truly is. And you think about these people, think about that statement about the Supreme Court justice, if that's in fact what she said. These folks have no foundation for morality. They have no transcendent values to look at. Didn't Europe already learn what happens when you allow this to happen? Didn't we already see this once, twice, a few times more than that? We don't remember things like that. So as I was looking around, I ran across, and by the way, 877-753-3341 is the phone number. I ran across, remember last week, I read you a bit of an article from that mentioned Pete Very And we thought it was Verrey. You know, we're all thinking, you know, people are fancy, you know. He was a canon lawyer, so maybe it's French. It's Verrey. The reason I know that is because I'm going to play you some audio from a YouTube audio clip. I have no idea what the background of this thing is. It's a goofy-looking thing. But anyways, it's just audio, so there's no video anyways. And this is Pete Verrey interviewing a fellow by the name of Van Dusen. And Van Dusen introduces himself, so we'll listen to it. Van Dusen is a counselor to this tribunal, this commission, this Human Rights Commission tribunal that is going after this Roman Catholic priest for daring to quote the Bible in a gay marriage debate. And same people that have gone after, you know, same kind of people have gone after Botswana and they're doing all the rest of this stuff. It's the thought police. It's the thought police of Canada. And they need to be seen for what they are. They are thought police. This is a form of fascism, state totalitarianism, and it's right north of our border. And believe you me, there are many people in the United States who want it here. They want it here, and they are going to be working very, very hard to establish it. It'll appear first in Massachusetts and California. Guarantee you that. But there are lots of people who want it on the national level as well. And certainly the mechanisms are in place to bring it to pass. No two questions about it. No two questions about it? No two ways about it. Anyway, I want you to listen to this guy. Because, you know, he's a representative, you know, he's a counselor to these people, standard attorney talk. But listen to how he talks and listen to what he has to say. I'll probably break in once, twice. Not very long. This is not that long a clip. But listen to this conversation.
Pete Verrey interviewing Mark Van Dusen. And I had thought you were spokesperson with the commission, but you said you're media coordinator.
Advisor to the chief commissioner.
Ah. Okay.
And so. Manager of media relations, I guess.
Yep. And you're aware I am recording it, yep. And I may likely will podcast this. So, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's start off with one accusation that several critics have made is that the commission operates on the basis that one is guilty until proven innocent. Do you agree or do you rebuke that statement?
We rebuke that statement. Absolutely false. The commission operates according to set procedures, and it treats every Canadian who files a complaint with us on an equal basis.
Okay.
I wonder if Christian Canadians began filing complaints based upon the constant outrageous offense of Christians. I wonder if they'd get treated fairly. I wonder if they'd have the same shot at winning these things. I mean, seriously, we have lots of reasons to be offended. The Canadian government would be the first person to complain against for offending Christians. But there's all sorts of things in the media and things like that. You know, all these places that have art displays showing Jesus. And I read about one yesterday. In fact, I read it on a Muslim website where one horrible display of Jesus had been taken down, but then it described the other displays of Jesus in this thing. I couldn't even believe it. I had never even heard of anything like this. It was disgusting. And it was a Muslim complaining about it because the Muslim was saying, hey, we believe he was a great prophet. What is this? We're offended. Oh, great. But, I mean, in other words, there's all sorts of reasons why we could complain about all sorts of things. But would we have, would we get the same kind of response, the same kind of ongoing prosecution that we see being aimed against Christians? I personally don't think so.
Now, is it true that any Section 13 complaint pursued by the commission to the tribunal has never been ruled in favor of the respondent? That's sort of clumsily asked, but I think you get the sense of the question.
That every complaint dealing with hate that goes to tribunal rules in favor of the of the complainant.
Yes, when brought forth by the
commission. No, it's not true.
Can you name any specific cases where the commission has brought a case to the tribunal based on Section 13 and the tribunal has ruled in favor of the respondent?
There was one. The case, off the top of my head, I don't remember. But, you know, to be clear, certainly the majority of cases, hate cases that go to the tribunal are ruled in favor of the complainant. That's because the commission only refers cases that it considers are of such a vilifying nature that that you know that they are likely to be upheld at tribunal. We don't.
Now think about that for just a moment. Vilifying nature. What did Pastor Boisson do? He said, quote, children as young as 5 and 6 years of age are being subjected to psychologically and physiologically damaging pro-homosexual literature and guidance in the public school system, all under the fraudulent guise of equal rights. That's vilifying. Oh, that's vilifying. Pure thought police. Pure thought police. Unbelievable. I mean, this is the stuff that Hollywood has been putting out there. But this person, you know, that's vilifying. What? You vilified homosexuals. You say that their lifestyle's damaging. Well, hello, they live 21 years less on average than non-homosexuals. You think maybe you might want to consider that? Man. Ay, 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 ay. And they just, well, damn, but that's, no, we can't, no, just equal rights.
Defend. Cases, frivolous or weak cases, ahead to the tribunal. We have a screening process that looks very carefully at all cases and will only advance those where we think that there is very strong evidence that the alleged complaint will, a complaint of hate will prove true.
Okay. Another complaint. And usually the examples cited are Bishop Fred Henry of Calgary, though the case against him was withdrawn, so probably not a good one. But is that with the Boissonneau case, and was that a federal or was that the Alberta Human Rights Commission?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. Are you saying that are you talking about a case that?
Yeah. Well, let's look at two cases that we know for certain are being looked into by the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. That's Father Alphonse Devalque, a respected Brazilian priest, and the Christian Heritage Party.
But if they're before a tribunal, we can't comment until the tribunal issues a decision.
Okay.
Now, notice that. If it's before a tribunal, we can't comment on it. Yeah, okay, that's not unusual. Later on, he's going to be asked, once the decision has been made, does this stuff become public? No. So this is all behind the doors, can't be reviewed, can't be criticized. Trust us. We are the government. We love you. We have your best in our interest. We are the all-wise. Follow us, mind numb zombies. That's what you've got going on here. Oh my goodness, to hear this kind of stuff, it is unbelievable.
Why would the commission investigate a case where Christians are simply holding on to positions that Christians have always held on?
We look at every case, and I can't comment on specific cases, but I can tell you we look at every case, you know, based on...
Now, listen to this. There's a good... How can you prosecute Christians for believing what Christians have always believed? Okay? I mean, clearly, just on any logical or rational basis, is it not true that Canada has had a long religious tradition? Of course it has. So if the government has not for generations from the beginning persecuted Christians and prosecuted Christians for believing what Christians believe in, does it not follow of logical necessity that to start doing so now is to reject the historical legal standing of the entirety of the history of the Canadian government, and hence engage in essence, an act of revolution. Does that make sense? Now listen to the response.
On the circumstances or the details filed in the complaint.
Okay, is stating moral opposition to same-sex marriage, is that a hate crime?
As I said, I can't tell you that. You're referring to a specific complaint, and I can't.
Well, I'm saying in general, if one, because of one's sincerely held moral beliefs, whether it be Jew, Muslim, Christian, Catholic, opposes the idea of same-sex marriage in Canada, is that considered hate? You know, they don't advocate violence.
We investigate complaints, Mr. Veery. We don't set public policy or moral standards. We investigate complaints based on the circumstances and the details outlined in the complaints.
Now think about that. Think about what that man just said. This is what is so dangerous and wrong about the entirety of quote-unquote hate crimes legislation and hate crimes law. You can't determine what fills the hearts of men. You can only act upon their actions, not upon what you think is in their heart. But you just heard a man saying, well, we just invest the facts in light of what's been defined by the law. We don't set moral standards. What? How do you define what is hate without moral standards? What an absurdity. Talk about doublespeak. And yet I don't sense anything that the guy knows this. It's just sort of what it's like, you know, to be a secularist. To have had your conscience seared to the last inch of it by your constant suppression of the knowledge of God and just be a grand old secularist and think this is just fine. This is, well, you know, we're just doing our best here. You know, you people are so mean. You know, oh, my goodness.
And, if we, upon investigation, deem that there is sufficient evidence, then we may forward the complaint to the tribunal. But the
sufficient evidence based on what? So in other words, if the government tells us that this action is immoral, there's no transcendent values anymore, upon what basis could someone who consistently holds this worldview in any way, shape, or form condemn, now let's start down the line of the great criminal governments of history. How could you condemn Stalin? How could you condemn Hitler? How could you condemn Mussolini? How could you condemn these governments that were simply doing what the government said to do? When we judge the German war criminals after World War II, it was based upon the idea that there was law that isn't just simply the result of a bunch of people getting together and going, oh, well, I think we'll do it this way. And yet, here we go again. They don't get it. They don't, you know, why can't people learn from the past? I don't know.
It is defined in the Human Rights Act under Section 13.1.
So there you go. That's how hate's defined. Hate's defined by Section 13.1, huh? That's how you define hate. Wow. Oh, my. What is there anything to be done about this? I don't know. I just don't think enough people are even, you know, I've said it many times. What is amusement? Muse means to think, ponder, to consider. Amusement means to not think, ponder, or consider. And we are so busy amusing ourselves that the vast majority of people don't even know about this kind of stuff. They aren't even aware that it's happening. And honestly, who cares? It's the old, hey, you start with them, and I didn't say anything about it. Then you went to these guys, I didn't say anything about it. Finally, when it came for me, there wasn't anybody to complain because I was last one left, you know? Same type of stuff going on. It just happens over and over and over again. It is the sign of a decaying culture. And we live smack dab in the middle of it.
And our job is to look at it, compare it to the Act, to accumulated case law, tribunal and court decisions that have reflected on hate, and decide whether to advance the complaint or dismiss it, or whether there's room for a settlement between parties.
Okay, in the case of a room of a settlement, does the commission?
Here's the part where he talks about. Do we get to find out, you know, about this stuff? You know, what's the story there?
Make these details public.
No, we don't. The process is guided by privacy laws, and we don't, first of all, disclose the nature of a complaint that comes before us, or the details of it, nor obviously names of parties involved.
Okay. How
to do so would compromise the whole system.
So here you have. See, this is what happens when you no longer have a system of laws. This is not law. These tribunal members, tribunal, man, that scares me. These tribunal members get to make law. That's what's so dangerous. You know, when our governmental system was set up, the Supreme Court justices and all those appellate court justices, people who have to rule on higher level orders of law, there was a standard by which they were to be held. They were to interpret in light of the intention of the law itself. There was the idea of coming up with new law just because you decided you're going to come up with new law was reprehensible. And everyone recognized that was the path to anarchy. And that's what's happening in our nation and in all the Western nations. That's how the will of the people has been usurped in all of these. What you do is take over the educational systems, and then you basically try to numb the conscience by constant exposure to that which is vile, to that which is against God's law. And over time, people, the shock value is gone. When you keep seeing it and seeing it, you might see just a little bit. At first, it might be very shocking, but the second time you see it, it's not as shocking. The third time, it's less shocking. And that's what we've seen going on in this culture. And so then you have the room for these people to get away with what they're getting away with. They make law. They sit as, it's now an oligarchy, a rule by a few. And there's no law that circumscribes them. They can make law as they go along. If they run across a law that's standing in their way, then they can just reinterpret it because the original intention is irrelevant. And isn't it fascinating that the very things they want to promote, the very things that are most opposed to God's truth and to God's law? That's how they express their detestation for God's law through the establishment of their own alleged law. And it just reminds me of what Paul said. Finally getting around to it here. After this long list of the sinful actions of mankind, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God. And by the way, that phrase could be translated hated by God. Insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And then listen to this, verse 32. And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. The final element of the perversion of the thinking of the reprobate is to applaud fellow sinners. Encourage fellow sinners. Sin loves company. When you have other sinners along with you to do your sin, that helps to drown out what's left, if there is anything left, of the voice of the conscience. And so, though they know, not that they speculate or they have a feeling, they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice those things are worthy of death, they not only do those things, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. And so many. How often do you hear politicians on both sides of the border? Well, I personally don't approve of behavior X, but it would never cross my mind that someone should be precluded from doing this. See, they heartily approve of those who practice them, and as long as they'll donate and they'll vote, I will pervert the law to give them what they want. Now, see, in this, I forgot to transfer it over to my system here. Sorry about that. But I download the PDF of the decision in the Boswan case. And in essence, at one point, the PDF lists what this homosexual activist, Lund, asked for, and then what the commission gave, and they were almost word for word. The commission gave to Lund exactly what he wanted. And imagine, if you will, for a moment, that the nation, what is the relationship between Canada and the royals these days? I realize that the monarchy is just a symbol anyway. But Canada once had such a, at least officially, a clear relationship to what was called Christianity. May not have been overly useful, but had it. And now you have this nation telling a Christian pastor that he is not to, and did you note on, I suppose I could just bring it up on my blog because it's there. Did you note the quotations that were put here? That Mr. Boswan and the Concerned Christian Coalition Incorporated shall cease publishing in newspapers, because that's what they did. He wrote a letter to the editor. Oh my, what vilifying thing that is to express your viewpoint in public. Can't have that anymore. No. Don't tell me these homosexual activists want equal rights for people. They do not. They want super rights. They want the right to never be criticized for what they do. That's what they want. Now, they want the right to criticize anybody who criticizes them, and they've gotten it. And it's pretty much been a quid pro quo. It's been, hey, you know what? We got lots of money because we don't have to raise kids. And we'll give you our money, and we'll give you our vote. And that's what they've done. Shall cease publishing in newspapers by email. By email, on the radio, in public speeches. You want to bet that includes sermons? Or on the internet, upon which you can post any kind of pornography, but you can't criticize homosexuality. In future, disparaging remarks about gays and homosexuals. Disparaging remarks. Don't you love the precision of these individuals? Disparaging remarks. What's that? Is that something like, quoting the Bible? Saying it's wrong? Of course, it's anything. Further, they shall not and are prohibited from making disparaging remarks in the future about Dr. Lund or Dr. Lund's witnesses relating to their involvement in this complaint. Further, all disparaging remarks versus homosexuals are directed to be removed from current websites and publications of Mr. Boswan and the Concerned Christian Coalition Incorporated. Does that mean that if they sell a Bible, that they need to start cutting out passages from the Bible? Because logically it would, wouldn't it? If they sold a Bible, if they published a Bible, wouldn't it follow that they'd have to remove Leviticus 18 and 20 and Romans 1? Genesis 18 and 19? And is that not exactly what the homosexuals want? You better believe it's what the homosexuals want. You better believe it. This is totalitarianism, folks, and it's right next door to us, and it's coming our direction, and it's coming a whole lot faster than I ever thought it would. This, when I say totalitarianism, when you can tell someone what they have to think and what they cannot think, and that in emails or what you say from behind the pulpit of the church can be determined by a small group of secular humanist demagogues, that's totalitarianism. And it's back. We thought we beat it in World War II. It just came back. Because you don't remember the past. Since you don't know anything about history, and in fact, in the West anymore, all you're taught in history is that we've just always been terrible people, that we've always just done the wrong things, and so you're taught to hate your country and to hate the accomplishments of the past, then why should anybody study history? In fact, if there is no God, if there is no creator, who cares about history? It's all random anyways. I mean, we got here by the random movement of molecules, so who cares about history? History has no meaning. Someday our sun's going to blow up and this planet's going to disintegrate and history will be irrelevant. Won't have any meaning, so who cares? What does it matter? Right? Absolutely amazing. Even an email. I guess what strikes me so strange about that is I have a really short email address, and so all the spammers nail it. And every year, I've forgotten what it is, but the current online version that we've got has nailed, I don't know, 178,000, and then my one on my machine's probably gotten another, 3,000 beyond that, you know? And so we're talking email? Wow. I mean, these are people who really think very highly of themselves. They have all power, absolutely omnipotent jurists. But then, as I pointed out in the article, here's what really blew me away. Any remedy awarded by this or any tribunal will inevitably serve a number of purposes. Who gets to define purposes? Prevention and elimination of discriminatory practices is only one of the outcomes flowing from an order issued as a consequence of these proceedings. Discriminatory practices. So if you express your opinion that exposing six-year-olds to pro-homosexual material is wrong, that's discrimination and you're a bigot. There is also a significant symbolic value in the public denunciation of the actions that are the subject of this complaint. Listen to that. This is a government speaking. They want to make a symbolic statement by publicly denouncing what? Simple Christian belief. You know, I'm looking through a window right now at a map we have up on the wall from Voice of the Martyrs. And Voice of the Martyrs color codes the nations as to their level of persecution of Christians. There's no color coding on Canada. It's now outdated. It needs to be changed. This government and these not bureaucrats, but judicial high priests need to be identified for what they are. They think they have the authority and power to silence the Christian faith. They have decided to persecute Christianity. That's all there is to it. And so they want to make a symbolic statement, has symbolic value in the public denunciation of the actions that are subject to this complaint. Similarly, there is potential educative and ultimately larger preventive benefit that can be achieved by open discussion of the principles enunciated in this or any tribunal discussion. You need to be talking about what we say, not what some God has said. You need to think about what we say. See? We need to educate you. Oh, educate you. Weren't the gulags educational? Weren't the concentration camps supposed to be educational? We just need to educate you on the glories of homosexuality. We need to re-educate you on the glories of murdering children in the womb. And we'll use our jackbooted thugs to do it. That's called totalitarianism. I thought, at least the way I was raised, I thought this nation had fought and, in fact, had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands had died to defeat this kind of stuff. And now it's waltzing through the front door. Potential educative and ultimately larger preventive benefit that can be achieved by open discussion of our view after we tell you to shut up. After we gag you, after we put tape on your mouth, then we'll have an open discussion. This is 1984. What kind of person can sit here and write this stuff knowing that you are purposefully shutting down freedom of speech? You are purposely silencing a position you can't refute. You don't even interact with it. And then have the gall to lie to yourself and to lie to everybody else and talk about open discussion. Isn't that again Romans 1? The perversion of the mind of man? And here it is. There is no question that the whole purpose of Lund's application, his complaint, is to silence the opposition. I personally think it's because they have to expend so much energy, homosexuals, to suppress that conscience because they know what they're doing is wrong. And that conscience is constantly there. That they will do anything to silence anyone who reminds them of what they're having to do over and over and over again. And so they will go to great lengths. And now the government of Canada has joined with them in plainly, clearly, inarguably saying to Christians, you open your mouth and talk about this. You stay consistent to your scriptures, and you will be punished. You will be punished. You will be dragged into investigations. I think somebody in Channel mentioned that this actually initially took place in, I think, 2002, so 6 years. We will drag you along for 6 years. We will drain you dry. Just move on. Tell nice stories about Jesus, but don't talk about his law. Don't talk about repentance. Don't talk about sin. Because if you mention anything, I mean, I don't see any logical or rational reason why, if you preached a sermon, how about preaching a sermon against profanity? About the need for having pure communication. You know, maybe you're preaching through James, and James talks about bridling the tongue and the perfect man. And I see no logical reason why there could not be a person who could not go to the Canadian government and say, look, I bleepin' didn't like that because I bleepin' talk like this all the bleepin' time. And I've been hurt. I've been scarred. This man has produced hate against me. There were people who know that I bleep and talk like this all the bleeping time. And so now he has produced hate against me. He needs to be silenced. On what logical basis should he not be allowed to proceed with this bleeping complaint? Huh? What logical basis? I mean, the thought across your mind is, well, that's stupid. Yeah, so was this complaint against Boswan. Utterly stupid. Without logic, there's no way to defend this. I'd love to get Dr. Lund to come down to the land of the free and the home of the brave where we can still debate this. I'd love to debate him, but we all know what would happen as a result of it. But he's not going to debate. He's got free lawyers called the government on his side. And that's what we're facing. And so once again, I know I sound like a broken record. But how long are we going to be able to freely proclaim the gospel, apply it to all the situations in our society? Speak about Islam. Speak about abortion. Speak about homosexuality. Speak about the things that the natural man hates. How long are we going to have that opportunity? And how much time have we wasted on the inanities and the stupidities that take up so much of what's called evangelicalism today? How much time have we wasted? Maybe that's why this is happening. Lord's going to take away the freedom because once you abuse it, once you refuse to use it, then how in the world can you possibly object when God says, I'm going to give this freedom to somebody else? You can't object. So how about you? It's easy for us to sit here and pound our fists and wave our hands in the air. But, you know, I am well aware of the fact that someday I'm going to have to count the cost. And so I'm asking myself, how attached am I to the things of the world? Because that's where our weakness is. That's where our weakness is. If we love the things of this world, then we will back down when this happens. But if our love for God's truth, for the gospel and for Christ is greater than our love for the things of this world, then we can stand tall. We can stand firm. So that's what's happening in the world today, folks. Got to think about these things. Got to think about them now so we can give a God-honoring response when the time comes. Don't know what's happening the rest of this week. We're going to have to play it by ear, schedule-wise. Might have something, might have not. Don't know. We'll see. But we'll let you know on the blog. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks.
Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.